We're just so happy that so many of you decided to come out today for whatever reason. And as you know, it's about caregiving, which is a big part of hospice and hospice home care and caregiving in end-of-life issues. So, you know, sadly, our bodies come with an expiration date, but we never really know what that is. But we've got wonderful people to help us on that journey. So what I'm going to do first is I found a couple of videos just sort of as an overview talking point. One, the first one is generally about hospice care, and it's from an Adelson Hospice Caregivers in Nevada. So there's a little bit of information from them about their facility, but the principles are there. And then the second one is just a three-minute video about what is a caregiver, and that's from Johns Hopkins. So we'll start with that. Yep.
Let me ask, do you know someone with a serious disease with a prognosis of 6 months or less to live if the disease runs its normal course? Are you trying to break the cycle of returning again and again to the hospital or emergency room? Have you seen how a life-limiting illness has diminished your loved one's quality of life? Do you want to do something about this, to move from treating an illness to caring for a person? In this first video of our hospice education series, I want to help you understand what hospice really is. I will explain how specialized teams work together to deliver personalized care to patients and families. I want to help you understand that hospice is a philosophy of care, one that reduces the burden of medical care so patients and their families can focus on what truly matters, their time together. Hello, I'm Karen Rubel, President and CEO of Nathan Adelson Hospice, the oldest, largest, and only nonprofit hospice in Southern Nevada. Over the years, we've learned that when a patient is no longer able or no longer wants to treat their life-limiting illness, their priorities change. What's important now is to find a way to experience the best quality of life. Many people find that hospice is the right answer for them or their loved one. Hospice is designed to meet the specific needs of patients and families during the end-of-life journey. A terminally ill patient and their family often deal with a complex mix of physical, social, emotional, and spiritual needs. We've found the best way to address all these different needs is with a team of skilled professionals trained in end-of-life care. Most families would find it impossible to assemble such a team, so hospice does it for you. These skilled professionals work closely with you and each other to optimize care at every stage. We've produced a separate video that describes in detail the different members of the hospice care team and the important roles they each play. You can find the link in the description if you wish to learn more. When a patient is receiving hospice care, this interdisciplinary group develops a plan of care. Using the plan, the team coordinates regular nursing visits, assistance with personal care such as bathing, as well as emotional, social, and spiritual support. Prescriptions related to pain and comfort are delivered to the home, along with durable medical equipment and supplies such as a hospital bed, nebulizers, walkers, and more. In general, hospice will assist in any way it can to make care as convenient and safe as possible. As a result, you have more energy and opportunities to spend quality time with your loved one. Hospice strives to make patients as physically comfortable as possible while making the most of the time that remains. Yet the end-of-life journey affects more than just the body. It touches all areas of a person's life, as well as their family. Patients and their families face new stresses, which can trigger fear, anxiety, or depression. Hospice professionals help you deal with emotional, social, and spiritual issues. Some of the problems brought on by a critical illness are practical, such as financial strains, job-related problems, insurance, or legal issues. Hospice can help with advice on how to handle these practical hardships too. It's important to know that hospice is not a place. It's a philosophy of care. Given a choice, Most people would prefer to be at home when they're ill. It's no different for people with a terminal illness, so almost all of hospice care is delivered in the home. For different patients, their home may be their private residence or that of a loved one, an assisted living center, or a skilled nursing facility. There are times when inpatient care may be needed. There are several reasons why a patient may be admitted to a hospice inpatient unit. When a patient has symptoms or pain that cannot be treated safely at home, or the patient requires careful supervision only available in a medical facility. Once stabilized, patients can be transported to their home to continue their care. For more information about where hospice
caregiver is a person who is in direct partnership with their loved one. And it could be a family member, it could be a friend, it could be someone who's a congregant in a church. It's someone that you know well enough that they've called on you to help them with their health care. And a caregiver can give a ride to a doctor's office, a caregiver can do errands, a caregiver can grocery shop, a caregiver can read to the person. So the caregiving role is so broad, and part of the call to care effort is to really help caregivers see that all these broad things that we do, we sort of take for granted that we do for people, are really part of that caregiving role.
A caregiver actually is a part of the healthcare team. And I don't know if we recognize that as much as we should, but I would love for the caregivers to understand that we value them in terms of the understanding that they have about their loved one, namely because they are there 24/7, 365 days a year. And oftentimes we have a snapshot in the provision of care for their loved ones. They're there for the long haul. They're there for that journey. And when they give us that information, we really value that, and we value what they do.
Caregivers are often an example of altruism. They're so devoted to the person for whom they're caring that they don't think of themselves as central to the care process. And so I encourage them to realize that they should look after themselves, if not for themselves, but because if they're not looking after themselves, they're not being a good caregiver for the person they're looking after. It's no good if something happens to them, whether or not they care about themselves. So I encourage people to make sure that they do some very, very basic things. First of all, make sure that they're on top of their own health, that they keep their doctor's appointments, that they take their medicines. Secondly, that they notice their own psychological state and that they reveal it either to friends or professionals. Occasionally, caregivers need advice about whether they need professional help for their psychological state. Then there are some very practical things that caregivers need to consider. One is to learn how to be caregivers. We typically have different roles, different relationships with the people for whom we are caring. And so it doesn't come natural to go from wife to being caregiver. Learning to be a caregiver is a process. So I encourage caregivers to see it that way, that they have a role change and that they need to evolve from whatever their role was to becoming a caregiver.
So all these wonderful points and this information is not just on a video, but we have access to it right here in St. George. And I think, Janice, you're talking about 35 different hospice organization, hospice type organizations here in St. George. Sadly, we don't have any big inpatient facility, but we have today Janice Millett. She has been at this business for 25 plus years. She started out as a CNA working with seniors, and then it just sort of evolved, I guess, into wanting to be a hospice caregiver. And she is administrator of Renew Home Care and Health right here in St. George. She will tell you about everything they do and the people on her staff and One we might know a little more intimately than the two other staff members she's brought today, Andrew and Preston, and she'll tell you about them. So, Janice Millett, thank you.
Hi, we're Renew Home Health and Hospice, and we do many things. We do home care in the home as well as hospice care. We provide physical therapists to come into your home, occupational therapists that come in, along with CNAs that come in to help with showers and assist with light housekeeping and some showering of anybody that needs our services. And then we have on our hospice side, we have our nurses. Well, we have nurses that go in home health too, but we have our nurses, our CNAs, our chaplain, our lovely chaplain. We love Ralph. He's wonderful, and we love having him on our team. And then we have volunteers that can come in as well, and we have a massage therapist that can come in. Did I miss anybody? Oh, our social worker, too. Our social worker can come in, thanks, Preston, and help out with, like, getting your living wills, your do not resuscitate pulse information, and helping with finances, and also helping you choose a mortuary, just things that you don't really think about. Some people don't realize that hospice care is available to them. It's covered 100% through Medicare. And a lot of people only use it 2 weeks before their loved one passes when it's available. They do want to know that you have a 6 months terminal illness, but that doesn't always mean that you're going to die within 6 months. We've taken care of patients for many, many years. So hospice can be a scary word for people, but it's actually just more eyes and ears and more help for the caregiver in the home. Most of the time, the caregiver gets burnt out before the patient, and so it's just good to have somebody in there to help with the end-of-life care and just everyday needs. I've asked Preston. He's one of our nurses. We have multiple nurses. We have about 7 or 8 nurses right now. I've asked him to come in and speak about caregiving. And we have Andrew here with us, too. He's our marketer. He goes out and plays bingo and does a lot of different things with our patients. So thank you for having us. We appreciate it.
Is that working? Can you guys hear me? Okay? Okay, perfect. So first, we've got this little form that we're going to pass out to everybody. And this here is a great guide to questions that you can ask yourselves and when you get to the point that you're ready to start looking for people to help with hospice care, questions to ask them so that you have an idea of kind of what the care is that you can be provided and what the expectations are going to be. This isn't an all-encompassing list, but this is a great starting point to questions to ask when you get to that point. So, Andrew, do you mind handing those out around? And so I've been asked to kind of talk briefly just about, you know, what it means to be a caregiver and what is a caregiver. And we got a good introduction in that video there. I like to view the role of a caregiver as a three-legged stool, right? One leg being the professional caregivers, like the nurses, the doctors, the CNAs. The second leg being the families and the friends who provide caregiving services. And the third and most important leg being the person who receives the care, right? And the weight of whatever the disease or issue is carried evenly by all three legs on this stool. And without one of the legs, the stool can't stand up. They're all equally important, the family, the professionals, and the patient themselves. So it is really, really important. And us with hospice, we really focus on providing support not only to the patient, but trying to provide support to the family and friends that are serving as caregivers, because they bear a serious weight, and it can be difficult. Like Janice said, a lot of at-home caregivers find themselves burnt out and needing more help, and that's where we really step in and help carry some of the load so that our three-legged stool can stand and be strong, right? And you know, like she said, hospice, people are sometimes reluctant when they hear the word hospice because no one wants to ever feel like they're giving up. But really, nowadays, hospice is, it's not about giving up. It's about changing the focus of the care. You know, earlier on in stages of life, we're always trying to fix problems that come up. It's always, you know, how can I fix this? How can I fix that? But there comes a point in life where fixing just isn't feasible anymore. And that's the point where hospice can come in and provide support much earlier than people realize, you know, for the months or even years leading up towards end of life. Because there's a big transition process that goes on there from the point where, you know, you have these problems that aren't able to be fixed to the point where you do get to the point where you pass. There's a long road in between with a lot that happens. And we help navigate that road, provide support for the patient, for the caregivers, throughout that entire process. And then I'll share with you guys just kind of what it means for me to be a caregiver. I've taken part in two legs of the three-legged stool. Luckily, I haven't had to be the person receiving care, but I've been the family and I've been the professional caregiver now. My youngest brother was born with half of a heart and underwent three open-heart surgeries in the first 3 years of his life. And so I got to witness, I was fairly young at the time, but I got to witness all the hands that were involved in saving my brother's life. And now he's starting his senior year of high school. He's got a brand new heart as of 4 years ago, and he's doing wonderful. But it wouldn't have been possible without my family, my friends, the professional caregivers, and, you know, my brother, of course, being strong and fighting through it. So I got to see early on in life what that three-legged stool looks like and the power that it can have in making a real difference. And that's, you know, what played a big role in inspiring me to choose the professional caregiver role. It's my way of giving back to the world, because without professional caregivers, you know, I wouldn't have a younger brother, and I'm forever grateful and indebted for that. And so I take great pride and really enjoy what I'm able to do for people in the community. I never thought I'd be a hospice nurse, never crossed my mind, but I kind of stumbled into it and have come to really, really enjoy it and have found how special it is to be able to provide this care for people towards the end of life. And like I said, not just for the patient, but for their family members as well, and to build those relationships and be there for them every step of the way. So, you know, we, like she said, we don't only do hospice, we do home health as well. We provide a vast array of services for a vast array of problems that are out there. And we really enjoy what we do. We have a wonderful team. Top to bottom, Ralph, you guys know Ralph and how wonderful he is, and I think our whole team is just as awesome as Ralph, and I have a lot of confidence in our team, and you know, maybe one of these days we'll be able to help you guys out in your roles as caregivers and provide you support, because we're all, you know, we all have that expiration date. It's coming for each and every one of us, even if, you know, sometimes, especially at my age, it's hard to imagine, but, you know, that's the point that we're all going to get to at one point or another. So, you know, really appreciate you guys having us, and thank you for being here. And like I said, hopefully we can build a relationship as caregivers someday down the road. Mm-hmm. So it depends on what the needs are, right? So when somebody first starts on hospice, you know, we get the whole team involved. So me as a nurse, I may start out as seeing them 1 or 2 hours a week. But then as we get down, farther down that road, closer towards the end of life stages, then we ramp up that. And I, you know, towards the end, I'm seeing them 5 days a week. And And you have our CNA coming in, starting out maybe just a few times a week, but also ramping up those services as we transition and those needs increase, we increase the support that we provide. So, so our CNAs can help a little bit on that. They can help a little bit, but we can also help set up services like Meals on Wheels and some of the other community services available. We can help facilitate getting those started if meals are needed and things like that. We facilitate the support of, there's a lot of support services in the community, and we can act as the liaison in getting those things set up when they're needed. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of a whole team approach there. You know, it may start with somebody reaching out to us and asking for an evaluation. And, you know, we go out and then we communicate with the doctors, whoever your primary physician is, as well as our team. We have a provider that we work with on the hospice side. And then, you know, I talk with Janice. I talk with our director of nursing. We kind of try to get everyone involved, the family, the patient, and our entire team to look at the situation, look at what diagnoses they have, what symptoms they have, and that's when kind of a decision is made. Correct. Yeah, so we have, Medicare gives us guidelines, you know. These are the guidelines that qualify somebody for hospice. And so when I go out and do my assessment and evaluation, I'm looking for anything that matches those guidelines. And then that's the information we send to Medicare. So typically, I mean, with diabetes specifically, you're almost always going to see other issues as well, such as heart failure or kidney failure. And those are the diagnoses that Medicare would more look for, are what is the diabetes caused? Do we have heart failure to the point that we're reaching end stages? Do we have kidney failure? Do we have both? And we look, you know, shortness of breath, needing oxygen, inability to get up and engage in activities, pain levels, all sorts of different things that we're looking for.
So mobility might be one of several triggers.
Absolutely.
How do you deal with that?
With mobility? Sure. So we offer, one of the things that's unique about Renew is we offer palliative physical therapy, even on hospice. So that we can try and maintain mobility as long as we can. It's limited physical therapy, usually like once a week, but we do that, and then we also determine the needs for different assistive equipment. You know, it may start out as a walker, may end up being a wheelchair, until it gets to the point that you're bed-bound and we provide a hospital bed that's able to adjust and help with mobility. Yeah, of course. Oh, sure. Yeah. Does anyone else have any questions for me?
Does the primary physician have to refer?
They don't have to, no. No, the family can reach out to us, and then we, like I said, we have a provider that we work with our hospice team, and I can conference with them. If the family chooses for us to conference with their primary physician, then we absolutely will, but it's not required.
I want to piggyback off of your first couple of questions. This may have been touched upon earlier, but
Hospice also provides on-call nursing 24/7, and so if something were to happen in the middle of the night, we kind of become the 911 per se. So you'd call the hospice number that's provided on this piece of paper that when someone becomes on or comes on hospice, we'll have that on the door, and we'll also put it other places too. But just so you know, that's the number you call. And sometimes it's Preston, sometimes one of our other wonderful nurses that's on call, and we'll answer it in the middle of the night, and we'll determine, hey, I need to come out and see you right now, or we'll give the best advice for whatever's going on during those off hours. But there is access to a nurse 24/7 on hospice. So,
thank you, Andrew.
Yes. Yes, no, that's great. Ralph said, like Ralph just said, we do every 2 weeks, we have a big meeting with our entire interdisciplinary team, the doctors, the nurses, the physical therapists, everyone involved, so that we can go over each patient and address any concerns that anyone has and make sure that the entire team is on the same page so that we know the care is coordinated and everything's being taken care of. Well, that's a thank you, Ralph. Thank you.
Nebulizer is?
So a nebulizer, that's a great question. So a nebulizer is a device that provides an aerosolized medication to the lungs. So we may get to the point where shortness of breath is a major issue. And there are certain medications that are put into a nebulizer machine. And then the patient, you know, has a little mouthpiece that they breathe in the aerosolized medication to deliver it directly to the lungs. That's a great question. Yeah.
This is for a paperwork question. Uh-huh. But this is for, not for us, but for our family members who may come and take care of us who are still working.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a physician that will fill out in a timely fashion the FMLA paperwork?
Absolutely. Yes. Yep. Our hospice provider that we work with, he's extremely responsive. And we can, you know, if we have anything that needs taken care of, we can run it right over to his office, have him review and sign whatever's needed. And take care of things quickly.
Because that's something, too, for people who have family members who may be coming that are still in the workforce, they can apply for family medical leave or to take care of you. And so it isn't for themselves, but it's to prepare a patient, and they get up to 12 weeks where their job is protected.
Yeah, well, that's a great point. Thank you. Thank you for bringing that up. Yeah, absolutely. That's a great point Ralph brings up. Hospice is nothing that's set in stone. You know, we prepare hospice services anticipating that there's going to be declines towards the end of life. But there are cases where, you know, we get somebody on hospice because they're not doing so well. And then they make a turn for the better. And when that happens, they can come off of hospice until it's appropriate again. So it's not, a lot of people, you know, think of hospice as a death sentence. You know, when I sign up for hospice, this is it. This is the end. And that's not it at all. We're not giving up. We're trying to provide the highest level of care that we can to support and provide care for the patient. And sometimes that's what it takes for them to start doing better. And then they may be, you know, another year or two before they do need the hospice services. So that's a great point. Yeah. Yes, no, please. This is great. This is great. Yeah, so that's a great question. So she asked if you're alone and you don't have a family caregiver and you are declining and can't take care of yourself. And that's a great question because there's a lot of options there. You know, there are companies in the community who provide private caregiver services where they can be there for extended periods of time throughout the day and they can work in coordination with us. And we've had several patients who have done that. They don't want to go into an assisted living facility. They want to stay home, but they don't have anyone there to take care of them. So we involve these companies that can provide private caregiver services.
But that's not covered under Medicare, right?
That's not usually covered under Medicare, no. That is where, you know, we have to really look at all the options and see what is going to be best, whether it be assisted living facilities, whether it be a private caregiver, or whatever we can work out. So there are options and it's usually not covered by insurance, so that's something to look at and think of for sure. Yeah. Yeah. Yes, please.
I have this belief
uh-huh.
that when I reach that phase,
That's a great question. So he just asked, when I get on hospice, am I able to take medications that prolong my life? And that's where their hospice won't cover those medications, but most of the time they will still get covered by Medicare. It's Part B or Part D. Part D. It's almost always still covered by Medicare. So hospice will not cover any medications aimed at prolonging your life, but most of the time they can get covered with some exceptions. Like, for example, IV antibiotics. Those would not be covered by hospice or by Medicare. Those would be something that would have to be revoked from hospice to receive. Usually cancer treatments, chemotherapy, radiation, things of that nature. And those are the few I can think of off the top of my head. So insulin, that's a great question. So a big factor with hospice is, what is the hospice diagnosis? And like we kind of touched on earlier, usually diabetes isn't the direct diagnosis, right? Typically someone would have heart failure or kidney failure. Now, you can still receive the insulin because the insulin is not related to your hospice diagnosis or your terminal illness. It is related, but it's not the hospice diagnosis. So you still can receive insulin. Mm-hmm. Yeah, please.
What, once you go on hospice, and you said you have a medical director, mm-hmm. what then is the person's relationship to their, could be multitude numbers of physician caregivers? I mean, are they just sort of over there now, or do they relate, or say you go off of hospice, mm-hmm. can you go back to these people?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's a great question. So anytime someone goes on hospice, they have a choice of who they would like to be their attending physician, you know, whether it be our hospice provider. Some people have a great relationship with their current provider and prefer us to communicate with them for changes in hospice. And so you still can stay involved with your current primary care physician while you're on hospice. We can communicate through them if you choose. And then if you come off of hospice, you absolutely can go back to seeing that primary care physician like you were before. Did that answer your question well enough? Okay, wonderful, wonderful. Does anyone else have any questions? Yes, please. So all of hospice is covered by Medicare, every bit of it. Medicare pays for all of it. And that's why when somebody is qualified for hospice, we have to follow Medicare's guidelines for those qualifying factors to make sure that they are deemed qualified by Medicare, because they are the ones who pay for all of the services.
So you get paid by them?
Correct. Okay. Correct. Yes. Well, so they start at 3 months. The first certification period is 3 months long. And then after the first certification period, it's every 2 months. Is that right? Every 2 months after that. And so that's how these periods work. And then at the end of each certification period, we do a big review of, okay, what has happened over the last 2 or 3 months? What signs of decline are there? And that's what Medicare will be looking for to stay on hospice, are signs of decline, signs that the disease progression is taking place. And that's what allows a person to stay on hospice as long as there are signs of decline. Like we kind of briefly mentioned, there's some people we've had on hospice for well over a year. You know, obviously they've outlived that 6 month prognosis, but they are still showing slow signs of decline every couple of months. And so Medicare will keep paying for it because they are still declining. Because, you know, they say 6 months or less to live, but really nobody except for the big man upstairs knows exactly how long we've got left, right? Nobody can tell us that. We can use our best education to determine what it may look like, but no one knows for sure. And so that's why you'll see people who do receive hospice care for longer than that 6 month prognosis, because no one really knows. We have an expectation of what we think may happen, but that's not always the case. So it can go on much longer than 6 months as well. Exactly, exactly. Absolutely. So now there's we look at each case, you know, individually. And like I said, at the end of those certification periods, the doctor and myself and everyone else on the team, we determine what are the signs of decline, what have we seen, what's going on, and then determine if they're still appropriate for hospice or if they're doing better, they don't need hospice services any longer. So,
What might be expected, because I know they're all different levels of care, but I had a personal experience where the person was obviously not going to be living very long, and he was in a facility, but it was well over 2 hours after he passed that this hospice caregiver was able to be located, mm-hmm. even the basic number. If you've had this relationship with the family or the caregivers, and it's really down to knowing this is going to be it, mm-hmm. are you there, or, I mean, what level of care might be expected or support might be expected?
Yeah, so when somebody, what we call, is transitioning to that period of active passing, right, at that point we notify everybody on the team, hey, this patient is transitioning, we expect something to happen soon, and we increase our services to as much as we can, to the point where I'm there 5 times a week, my CNA's there 5 times a week, we have LPNs that I work with in conjunction to myself that will be coming several times a week, and then like Andrew mentioned, we have that 24/7 on-call availability. So the periods that I may not be there, there's the on-call nurse if something were to change or something were to happen. And when somebody gets on hospice, we give them a form with the number on it, big and bold, as to the on-call number, and make sure that they have that and know exactly where it is in the event that something does change or something does happen. And then for all of my patients, when I start with them, I make sure they have my cell phone number so that they can call me, text me, and if there's a need for me to be there and I'm available, I'm there, or someone else from my team is there. And that's one of the things I love about this team the most is that we've got incredible communication and incredible teamwork, where I may be tied up with a different patient and situation, but we'll find whoever is available that can be there when they're needed.
Well, I have another one.
Yes, please, go ahead. Go ahead.
Forgot what it is.
Oh, that's okay.
I will set my retrieval in motion. That's what we had a neuropsychologist. Yeah, right. Oh, I'll ask you a quick question while you're remembering.
I'm curious about Reverend Ralph's official position with your company.
Yeah. You know, Ralph, I think you'd be the best one to speak on that. So he's our chaplain. So he provides, you know, spiritual support for our patients and their families. But yeah, he's the man to talk to on what he does.
I serve as a chaplain, and you might be interested to know that Medicare requires that the hospice team have a chaplain, and that his presence is required when the team has their meeting. And the way it works is that when someone comes under hospice, all the team members are required to be in contact with them and to make initial introductions, so forth and so on.
Within 5 days.
And so when someone comes under our care, I'm required to get in contact with that person or their family within 5 days and ask the question if I can be any spiritual support or care for you. And sometimes they say yes, sometimes they say no. And part of my task is when I meet with them to check with them, do you belong to any church or religion or any faith? Are you in contact with your bishop, your priest, your elder? Are you receiving support from them? Would you like me to contact them? And so forth and so on to kind of make sure that they have coverage. And if they indeed want my spiritual support or care through this process and this time, I will periodically contact them and very often visit with them and pray with them. And then I'm required to basically report that back to the team for our meetings.
Yeah. Ralph is amazing. I mean, you guys all know, but we love Ralph. And what he does for our patients and their families is cannot be overstated. I mean, he is a crucial part of our team, like everybody else. Did you remember?
It worked. I did.
All right. Let's hear it.
In the video, the Adelson facility was mentioned, and I know where we came from. Dayton, Ohio, we had a most wonderful facility, in-house hospice facility. We don't have anything like that here in St. George, do we? What if someone, their home isn't suitable or they just can't be in their home? I mean, is there any option?
There's a couple options. One being respite care, which is if a temporary stay in an inpatient facility is needed, then we coordinate with one of the many different facilities around town to see who's available. I think it's up to 5 days for respite care. Now, if that's not adequate and we need longer-term placement, then most likely we would be looking at the assisted living and skilled nursing facilities around the community. And they kind of serve as that inpatient. Although they're not dedicated to hospice, they are familiar with hospice and have patients on hospice and so on and so forth. So they can have that more 24/7 care provided, and then us as hospice going in addition to that. So it would be great if we had a dedicated inpatient hospice facility. But we kind of have to make do with the current facilities and infrastructure that we have in place, being assisted living facilities and skilled nursing facilities around town. Oh, yes. And one more quick point that Janice just reminded me of is we also, you know, even after the patient passes, we offer 13 months of bereavement care for the family to make sure that they are working through the grieving process and that they have all the support that they need even following the death of their loved one. So we're there, like I said, not only for the patient, but for the family, before and after the patient passes. Yeah, go ahead.
Do you use volunteers?
We do. We do utilize volunteers as much as we can. I mean, sometimes it's tricky to get volunteers, you know, but as much as we can get volunteers, we love to have them, and we love to utilize them as much as possible because they are such a big help. I mean, sometimes all our patients need is somebody to be there with them, right? They don't need me to be giving them medications. They don't need our physical therapist to be working with them. All they need is somebody there, and that's where volunteers are. It's amazing what they can do. So if any of you would like to be volunteers for hospice, we would love it.
I used to do that and take the dogs out for walks and you know, that kind of stuff. And it was always great.
Oh, yeah.
That's years and years ago. Yeah. So absolutely. I was wondering about that.
We do. So, yeah, if any of you would be interested in being volunteers for our hospice patients, we would love to utilize you. So don't hesitate to reach out.
Touched on most of the subjects. So it was just our medical director and our 24-hour nursing that I wanted to make sure you guys knew about. And then we have some brochures at the back of the room. Feel free to take them. My number is, my cell phone's on that card back there. Anytime you guys have any questions, doesn't matter what it is, just give us a call. I'll be more than willing to help you out with any kind of resources in the community. Five Counties has great resources to help with a lot of different needs that people have at the end of life. I'd love to help any of you with that. So reach out at any time.
Home health, we do a lot too. I mean, most of the time, home health, we see patients who are getting weaker, their mobility is getting worse, and home health is where we really focus on physical and occupational therapy. And there are times where I'm needed as well in home health, whether it be wound care or whether it be assistance in medication management. Maybe they, you know, need help setting up their weekly pill box, or they have an injection that they're not able to handle. I can help with that. And then we have our therapists are the main focus of home health.
in building strength, endurance, and trying to maintain strength and mobility for as long as possible. And so, you know, you'd see the therapist. We usually do PT and OT twice a week each for home health. And usually home health, we can go for 2 to 4 months on home health services, with CNAs available as well for showering and other needs as well.
But none of that would be covered by Medicare?
It is. It's covered by insurance. So on home health, there are some insurances that we can't take. And in those cases, we have to refer that patient to a different home health company, because each home health company can take different insurances. So insurance does play a little bit of a bigger role in home health in determining whether or not we can help you. But even if we couldn't, somebody could. And the doctor writes us an order saying that this patient needs home health. And then if we can take the insurance, then it's all covered by insurance. Mm-hmm. So there's no out-of-pocket cost for home health either. Correct. So home health can't usually go, as long as hospice, because, you know, we hit plateaus, we get to the point we can't make progress anymore. And so, like I said, usually 2 to 4 months is about the average time we can do home health. There are extenuating circumstances where maybe we have you on home health, we're 3 months in, you have a fall, you're injured again, and you've declined more, then Medicare can allow us to go a bit longer in extenuating circumstances like that. Yeah.
Any other questions? Well, we really appreciate Janice and Preston and Andrew. Your delivery service was impeccable. Thank you so much for coming. And I think we all learned something. And as Janice said, there are all kinds of little brochures back there. We do thank you for a delicious lunch. It was certainly more than we expected. So thank you.
Good.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.